Mr. Tyhurst Realtor.
As I say, 50 pound a kit, you were carrying that all day long. You took it off naturally in the evenings when you retired. Then you carried that out when you went out. Mostly we were out perhaps 2 days, 3 days training in jungles, or what was jungle then, but it was nothing to what was like when we got inside. And we used to go out on these schemes, as they called them. We'd be out 3 days. Every success, we'd come back and have a couple of days rest in camp. If not, you came back, kitted up again with food, out. And that's how it went on. The training was very, very hard, but as it turned out, it was needed. Then, after our training, naturally, it was due to go in. The 10th of March, I think it is, when we flew in.
This is 1944.
1944. Well, that was the second expedition. We went up onto the airstrip at Lavergap, I think it was, on Infall Road. And...
was it Tulikal?
Well, we went up to Tully Hall and we got on the plane then and we flew into Broadway. Now, on our training, we were taught to come off the aircraft and take up positions, etc., around it, because we were in enemy territory. But when we came over to Broadway, it was just like coming over Piccadilly, if you like. There was lights and everything. We got out the airplane and they said, right, take it easy, no need to rush. And we were taken and we put up positions around the perimeter and then we harboured up for the night. Then after that, we carried on and started off on the job which we were intended to do. But it was hard. We had everything that we needed, we had to carry. But prior to going in, like idiots, we threw a lot of our stuff away. We cut our blanket in half, which was crazy, we found out afterwards. And we were also encouraged, the two of you, to be together all the time.
What was the idea of cutting the blanket in half?
Lighter to carry. Less weight.
You discarded the other piece?
Discarded the other half, which was, we learned afterwards, was silly. And as I learned, I threw my spare boots away. And I learned afterwards that it was a silly thing because my boots were all broken and I couldn't get replacements. I only took a size 6 in those days, and of course, they never got to size 6. It was always sizes above. So I had to retain the boots all the time. And they were split and torn. The mud used to go in, so I used to have to scrape the mud out each night. Because they were useless, but I couldn't get a replacement pair. Because throwing the old meaning spare ones away, which was silly. It's like everything, you don't learn until afterwards. It's too late then to go back.
You were saying that you had to pair up?
The two of you always went together. So you slept together, so therefore your two halves of the blanket covered both of you. He was encouraged to have a mucker. And my mucker died 3 years ago, actually. Our first casualty that we had was one of our own lads that was shot. The guard on the perimeter, we used to harbour up, naturally, and we had a perimeter. And the lad that was on sentry duty that night, he heard rustling. And he challenged, got no answer, so he fired. And it was a corporal and a private that the muckers sleep in the cabin, and they were sleeping just outside the perimeter. And he fired and he hit the private and killed him. That was our very first casualty. And the poor lad that did the shooting, he went white. His hair went white. It worried him so much. North lad, and it's one of those things. After that, it was just the usual things which were on that sheet. I can't go through them all. Apart from one night, that was on the 5th of March, 5th of April, thank God. We put a roadblock on, at least 41 column, I was 46. 41 put a roadblock on, and 46 was acting as closer. And naturally, we hadn't had any sleep for that for a few days, not proper sleep. And during the process of acting as floater, we lay down, taking up positions, and I fell asleep. And when I woke up, I was on my own. The column had got up and gone. And it was very frightening, being on your own in the jungle. Yeah, I woke up all on my lonesome. And I lay there, covered myself up with my half blanket, and had a cigarette, and then waited till daylight. And we was always told to head north, you're bound to hit either the American Chinese or something, so the lines you'll be able to get through. Well, fortunately, when I started to wander off, I found one or two bits of things which I shouldn't. Was mule droppings and twigs broken. And of course, in the training in those days, you knew full well that those were the sort of things you look for, which they shouldn't really be there, because tail group should pick all that up. Anyway, I followed on, and I went up a bit of a rise, and I saw smoke. And then it was a toss-up. Would it be our Japs or would it be Japs? But when I got up the top of the rise, I got challenged in English. And I knew that it was our own lads. And I walked into 41 column. They told me where 46 was harbouring up. And I went over there, and I got over there just as our runner was going over to HQ to report me missing. So there was no need, I was safe. I was about, 3 or 4 hours on my own. And believe you me, it was frightening.
What was this tail group that was supposed to clear?
Tail group is every day there was a section put down as tail group. Now they went along and they covered up tracks, picked up any rubbish. They were behind the column. The column was always in snake formation, and they were right behind, and anything which was likely to give us away, they had to pick up or disguise. That was their job, and also to keep watch that we weren't being followed. But of course, in the jungle, you could walk within, a few yards of the enemy and wouldn't know they were there. Because in parts of the jungle, it's so thick that, you couldn't hear and you couldn't see. But, as I say, fortunately, I found a couple of bits of stuff that I shouldn't have found. And that put me on the right track. And I found the rest of the column, and I was very grateful. And I didn't fall asleep anymore after that.
Did you ever serve on a tail group?
I served on a tail group, and also in between Katha and Indore, we went through there in the early parts, and that was where we lost water. The because we went through there and we was going into this thick gorse, and I was at that time with the advance section, and we bumped into a Japanese rest camp, and understandably it was down and shots were fired, and we didn't want to be sort of recognised, if you like, because it was detriment to the operation that we was on. So we went off up in the hills, and prior to that, we got the order to fix bayonets, and we had our charbles, which were like a canvas water bottle, on our bayonet frog, which was stitched onto our big pack. Well, with withdrawing the bayonet, the charbles fell off, and we lost our water. The only water we had was in our water bottles, and that never lasted long. And we had a day and a half, 2 days without water. And believe you me, it's not very pleasant. We let two mules loose when we got up the hill, and they wandered off down, and they found water for us. And at that time, if Jack had followed us, well, he'd have had a nice time, because we'd be all wallowing in the water drinking. We'd get told not to drink. But one of the times when discipline didn't work, we were drinking because we were that thirsty. Then after that, we had, because we were called the Phantom Brigade at that time, because we were lost, they couldn't find us. We were supposed to have a supply drop, and that didn't materialise. And then we had the light planes flew over, and we waved our panic maps, which was a silk orange map, but North Burma one side, South Burma the other. And of course they reflected in the sun, and they spotted us, and they dropped these small packages of rations to us. That was the first we'd had for about 4 days. That was in one of the books I've got. It said it was called the Phantom Brigade. Then we went off on our normal duties then, doing villages, car parks, dumps, roads, the usual things that you do in ambush, until we was ordered into to make the Blackpool block. And that's the thing that stands out most in our minds, because it was the object of the strongholds being put on in Burma with us, were that they were farthest away from railway and roads and so on, so they couldn't bring up heavy guns and so on to bang us. Because the heaviest thing we had at that time, naturally, because everything had to be carried, was a 3-inch mortar and a Vickers machine gun. Well, when we put Blackpool Block on, it wasn't far from the road and railway. And these planes came in and bombed us. Then, towards the end, he brought up big guns and he was banging hell out of us. At times there was, I believe, so it says in some of the books, 300 shells a day were landing on us. And of course, towards the end, we was there for nearly 3 weeks. Towards the end, when we got chased out, he came up through the airstrip, and there was, we couldn't hold him because we couldn't get our supplies dropped. They were falling on him more than on us. We were short of ammunition, short of food. And then he brought these big guns up and started banging us, also bringing up tanks because he was quite near the road. And it was out. Our colonel, he tried to reform a group of Gurkhas and I think it was the King's Liverpools to counterattack, but he got severely wounded and he had to be carried off. And then it was just get out as best as you can. They called it a strategic withdrawal, but it was more or less get out as quick as you can and the best way you can. And then we had to clamber up because it was during the start, monsoons were starting then. And we had to clamber up the hills, which was mud, nothing but mud. It was a hell of a job. But from then on, I can't remember a great deal. We went so far, we carried some of our wounded. A lot of our wounded were put to death in the block by officers and the medical orderlies because they were too seriously wounded to be carried. And, of course, with the Japanese, they never looked after the sick and wounded as we did, which was, they never recognised the Geneva Convention, did they, not the Japs. And they just used to kill all prisoners, all wounded, kill them. And, as I say, our medical officers and the orderlies and some of our officers put the seriously wounded to death in the lot. Some that lived on, you could hear their screams after we got out. And what the Japs did to them, God knows. But you could hear them screaming from miles away. And it's very, well, frightening. It makes you think, is it worth it? And then, after all about, another couple of weeks after that, I was flown out myself with dysentery. I went to Palatola Hospital, and from there to Digboy for convalescent, then rejoined the units at Murray. And that was when the units were disbanded. We were supposed to have gone back in with the 44th Airborne on Rangoon. But of course the Chindits were disbanded. Our reinforcements never arrived in time. So we went then down into Cawnpore in India on internal security duties.
When did you personally engage in the heaviest fighting with the Japanese?
The heaviest fighting was in the Black Bull Block. That was the heaviest fighting that we engaged in. We was down in the, well, they called it the deep, down by the water point. And he used to come in night after night. The guns used to open up, and they always seemed to open up first thing in the morning, last thing at night, when you wanted to have something to eat. And then at night, just at dusk, they'd come in under the wire, and it wasn't very far away, and they used to come in hordes. And you more or less, well, you were firing blind. You just used to keep firing and throwing grenades. Next morning, there'd be loads of them lying there dead. And then we were there for a couple of, about 10 days, I suppose. And we got relieved and brought back further up, and they put the King's Liverpools and the Cameronians down where we were, because we took hell of a bashing. It always seemed that when they opened up with the guns, they nearly always hit either the machine guns or the mortars. Their observation posts were terrific. We had a ridge out from us. It's called Parachute Ridge, because we had Mitchell bombers come over and they blasted the ridge, and there was hardly any trees or anything left on there. And a section of us were detailed to go out there to reconnoitre. We got halfway out there, and the Japs seemed to come out of the ground like worms. How the deuce? Well, their foxholes and that were terrific, because after the way that ridge was blasted, when we started to go up there, and they were coming out of the ground like worms, and we turned tail and run. Because we couldn't do it, it was in this section of us. We couldn't do a thing. we'd done what we were supposed to have done, reconnoitred, and found out that it was still inhabited. So away we came and got back. That was, well, it was frightening, that was. When you go up, you know, you're clambering up a hill, and suddenly all these Japs seem to come out of the earth. Yes.
What kind of weapon were you using yourself at the back pool block?
Rifle and a cup discharger on the rifle, which fired grenades. You used to put the grenades in the cup discharger. So you'd be firing the cup discharger a part of the time, then you dismantle that and carry on firing your rifle. I only had a rifle. But we had a Bren gun in our trench. There's a Bren gun there with us. That was my power, actually. So it was like a Bren gun. And there was four of us in the foxhole that we were in. So it was three rifles and a Bren gun. And what you do, you put a cap discharger on and use a ballistite cartridge, put a grenade in the cap discharger and fire them off. That was like, you know, like using a mortar, in other words.
Who do you think had the better weapons at Blackhall?
Well, we had light weapons. They brought in 25-pounders and Bofors. And at that time, they were firing the Bofors on the open sites because, you know, the Japs were attacking. That was towards the end. The 25-pounders, they used them a couple of times, but they never had enough ammunition for them. And we had to rely on the airplanes to drop our supplies. And at that time, the weather being bad, they either planes never came in, or when they came to drop, they had to drop them up high, because the Jap had anti-aircraft guns, and that kept the planes high. So instead of the loads dropping down on the block, they were going outside, which the Jap was reaping the benefit. Jap lines of communication at that time were okay, so they could get their supplies up. They were near the road, near the railway. So they could get supplies up where we couldn't. So although we had respectable weapons, if you like to put it that way, their weapons were far superior because they had more supplies. I mean, expenditure of ammunition for them was nothing. But we had to conserve our ammunition. We had to make every shot sort of count. Because everything we had to carry or supply by air. So therefore, they'd bring up their ammunition, they had their tanks and everything, and they could do what they liked. That was one of the reasons why the block really, reading about it, I mean, at the time I didn't realise it, but since reading and so on, you learn that the block was a stupid place to be put because it was too close to road and rail supplies for them. The object of Wingate's plans were to make all these stockades and blocks away from lines of communication. We use them. We put airstrips in, our planes come in, but their lines of communication were bad. But with Blackpool, it was in my opinion, it was a failure. Because it was put too close to road and rail. So therefore, they could be supplied, we couldn't. Especially when the weather turned bad, because the planes couldn't come low enough to drop onto the block. The parachutes were being dropped, but they were wandering off all the way around. And we couldn't get them. As it was, on a normal drop, you're supposed to get a 5-day drop of food. But you'd be lucky if you'd reap in 3 days out of that 5. They still out of last year, might have to last you longer than 5 days. So I mean, all the time you were short of food, and what with the disease and so on, I mean, it was hard work marching. I mean, sometimes you only did a few miles a day. because you couldn't. We used to have to clamber up the hills, take the loads off the mules, drag the mules up, and carry their load up. I mean, they were wonderful animals, but they just couldn't get up some of the muddy slopes. And then, as I say, after the block, we had to carry our wounded as well, clambering up slopes. In one part, I think it was the West Africans, they dug sort of steps out so that we could get up. Because it was more or less impossible trying to clamber up muddy slopes.
Did you have to carry a wounded man yourself?
At one time I did. I assisted in carrying a wounded on a stretcher. But it was only a short haul. My pal and I, that was me mucker, he lived at Bracken, where he died a couple of years ago. Him and I, we were sent on a tow group, and we had my rifle, he had the Bren gun, and a pull through stuck up the barrel, so it couldn't be used, and we never had a spare barrel. And we were the last of our group. So we couldn't have done much if Jap had followed us. Fortunately, Jap never did follow us out of the block. If he had done, I think he would have annihilated a lot of us. Because there was very little we could have done. We were short of ammo, short of food, short of everything. So if he'd have followed us up from the block, I think he would have annihilated all of us.
Did you ever see the Japanese close up?
Oh, I've seen them close up. I've seen them dead as well. I've seen them close up. You don't know, how can I explain it? You see them coming up on the wire. They're up on the wire. You're firing. You don't know whether you're shooting one or whether your mate's shooting them. You just keep firing, hoping that what you're running, you can miss them. But you're hoping that you're shooting as well, you know, you're killing them as well as the bloke next to you. It's a horrible feeling. But the thing is, it's you or them. Now, actually, the bombing in London was worse in some respects, because the bombing in London, when they're dropping those bombs, you can't do anything at all about it. But when you're there in a trench and someone's shooting at you and you're shooting back, you feel better. You don't feel so frightened. You feel more frightened in the bombing when you can't do anything. It's the same as when they were shelling you. You're more frightened then than when you're getting a frontal attack. Because when you're getting an attack, you are doing something yourself. You're firing at them. But when they're shelling you, you can't do anything at all about it. You just got to lie there and hope for the best. It's a strange thing, but you know, you feel better when you're firing at somebody than when they're